Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
For the 100th time, Owlpost is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, not looking over age 77 podcast-wise, Drea Kaufman.
I was like, where are you going with this? Hello, everyone. Matt, you don't look a day over 77 podcasts either.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, it's a lot of hard work. You know, it's plenty of kale, lots of juicing. No, just kidding.
Plenty of B12.
That's right. That's right. Taking your vitamins every single day, kids. That's the way you got to do it. Oh, goodness. But so excited to be here for episode 100 of Owlpost. It's been a blast so far, and it's crazy to think that 100 episodes in, we're on Chapter 6 of The Order of the Phoenix, The Noble and Most Ancient House of Black. And so before we dive into the episode, as always, you know what we're going to say. We're going to talk about...
we said it 100 times now.
That's right. Find us all over the place. In fact, you know what? If you've been listening to Owlpost and you haven't given us a star rating review on iTunes... or Apple Podcasts, that's honestly the best gift you could give us. Go over there, let us know what you think of the show, help people find it. Also subscribe on any platform, wherever you're listening, make sure you're subscribed to Owlpost so you get the episodes as soon as we drop them. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. You can find us on the Nerd Party Network over on the web at thenerdparty.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, and maybe, just maybe, after 100 episodes, you thought, I should really send them an email. We'd love to get your email. So go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owlpost, and then Drea and I will get that email and we'll be able to talk to you that way. So with all of the different ways to contact us, I think it's time to dive into this chapter, which, again, picks right back up where we left off with the kids all going to bed. I really like that as they're getting ready for bed, you know, the Harry, he's kind of getting tired and, you know, the boys are doing things in their room. And I thought it was interesting. We learn a little bit about the life at the house already, which is that the owls aren't really allowed out a lot to hunt because Dumbledore is worried about too many owls around the house. And so they feed their owls. And then Ron locks the door because... creature. He likes to snoop around in things, and Ron's like, there's nothing creepier than waking up to him in your room in the morning.
I think even before we get to this point, I love the fact that as they're heading upstairs, you know, Fred and George are like, yeah, if Ginny is not sitting waiting up in her room for Hermione, I owe you $5. Like, whatever the bet was, like, it was like, if that is not happening, I would be shocked. And I love that that's right where it starts. And it's like, then why, you know, it kind of goes back to what we talked about in the last episode a little bit. Like, why did we bother to exclude Jenny? Like, she's a year younger. Hermione's just going to tell her everything. Like, yeah, might as well have just let her stay too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, and I think it's one of those moments where Molly can just control one thing and she's going to do it. And she just needs that to almost save face at that point.
She needed a win, and that was the win that they could give her. So
I also think it's hilarious that they turn off the lights and there's immediately a crack in their room and the boys have apparated back in. That's Fred and George, and they're like, you're on my leg. He's like, I'm sorry, it's hard when it's dark. And they continue to have the conversation, which is about what we learned last time, that there is a weapon, and the boys are wondering what in the world could be worse than the Avada Kedavra curse, the Cruciatus curse. What in the world could they possibly be after?
And it gets tense in a moment in that conversation because, you know, Harry has experienced that firsthand now. And they kind of say like, oh, he needs a means to control someone. And Harry's like, no, he doesn't. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, this got awkward. You know, it's that moment you say something in a conversation and you're like, ooh, yeah, sorry about that, Gene.
Ooh, my bad.
Didn't mean anything by it. All right, we're just going to go over here.
And it's so funny, you know, you mentioned last time about Ginny being a bigger part of the series now, like, and she is here too, because they're arguing about whether or not this weapon would be big or not. And I love Fred's like, well, I mean, not necessarily, you know, size is no guarantee of power. Look at Ginny. And Harry's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, I guess you've never been on the receiving end of one of her bat bogey hexes, have you? I just thought, she's turning into such a little badass.
Well, and it's we've talked already about the fact that, you know, she has been able to befriend and learn from Tonks. And, you know, she is pretty much holding her own amongst her brothers. And now we're hearing that she can cast a mean little hex. And, you know, we're just learning so much about that. She's creating this character that can stand on her own, which is really unique. We don't really have a fighter in the Weasley family, if you will, you know. In the traditional sense of that. So yeah, we're sort of seeing that develop in Ginny, and it's really fun to watch.
Well, and I mean, it makes so much sense with a girl having that many brothers. You know, you would think that she'd have to be a fighter just to get a word in edgewise with all those boys. And, you know, I feel like it just makes so much sense for Ginny to be this type of character. And I also get the sense already that she's very much her own person, you know, which is great, you know, that she's creating a dynamic character who we really haven't got a chance to spend too much time with. So I'm hoping we get more of her, wink, wink, in the book.
Well, and I really think that it all makes sense too if you take into account what happened to her in book two, right? She found herself in this very weak place where she didn't have anybody and she relied on someone else and it didn't work out and she couldn't hold her own. And just learning from that experience, like knowing that she needed to do something and become strong on her own and speak up and, you know, that not to be afraid, like all of that has to feed into the person she's becoming and the person that Rowling is writing here. So it makes sense, like why we are getting the Ginny we're getting. And I'm eating it up. I'm buying what she's selling here.
Oh, me too. Me too. Spoiler alert, Ginny is one of my favorite characters in the entire series.
Mine too, yeah.
I'd totally marry Ginny if it was possible, you know. Like if
ooh,
she was a real
I'm telling
person.
Your wife.
Yeah.
Ooh.
She already knows. She already knows.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I figured as much.
What's interesting, too, is, you know, the next morning they get up. They're going to start cleaning the house. And we learn that there's lots of doxies in this this room. And it's full of all of this stuff. And this house just feels awful. It just feels like she even mentions that, like, when you step on the carpet in this room, that, like, dust kind of comes up a little bit. So this place is just disgusting. And the fact that, you know, they also talk about the fact that creature's been here for years. And, you know, house elves are meant to keep things clean. But apparently that hasn't been happening. And I feel bad when we learn that creature's been here for, what, 9, 10 years since she's been dead, except been taking orders from a mad portrait. So, yeah, you get this. I mean, you have this dichotomy in this chapter of some of the things we learn about the creature, about creature and his behavior, even in the chapter. In the way he's treated by Sirius, who, you know, obviously has his own issues when it comes to all of this stuff, and just the character himself. And you, like, you're caught in this limbo of kind of feeling bad for him, but at the same time, and not. And I feel like she's doing a good job of creating some dynamic storytelling here. So you're not necessarily sure how to feel about this specific house elf.
Yeah. And what's interesting is I always felt like the creature story sort of mirrored a little bit of the message she's trying to send in general, in terms of, like, you know, we're not necessarily our personalities aren't controlled by the circumstances we find ourselves in, but they're by choice, right? Again, Creature's in a really terrible situation, and Sirius is not treating him well, and he's been sort of abandoned by his true masters, you know, for like a decade. But he's choosing the path of, you know, the Black family. He's choosing to be this crotchety old house elf who, we see tries to steal stuff out of the trash, and, you know, who does all of these things and, you know, speaks under his breath ill about them and uses mud blood and traitor and all this stuff. You know, he's making a choice to some extent, and, you know, it kind of, I think, just continues to paint that picture of, like, you know, he could choose to accept the master he's got now, and try to make a better life. But, you know, he's old and doesn't want to try and doesn't want to learn, you know, and, you know, Dobby was a similar situation, and he chose to stand up for the right side. You know, I feel like Dobby and Creature are those kind of two sides of a coin. And we're seeing that again, that dichotomy, she just keeps playing with it throughout all of her books. That's kind of how I always took this Creature character. You don't like him, but I feel sorry for the circumstances he found himself in, but he has a choice to be a better house elf than he is, and he's choosing not to do that. So, you know, you can appreciate the difficult experience they've had, but not have it excuse the behaviors that they're doing.
It's so interesting too, because, you know, when you have kind of laid out before you in this chapter that Sirius does, when he, you know, we see the family tree and he's talking all about the inbreeding basically that's happening between all of these wizarding families, pureblood families, and how they're all connected. In fact, we even learn that he's related to Tonks,
and the Weasleys.
I mean, like that these families are so interconnected. But the thing with Creature that's so fascinating to me is that he has been in this environment where it is all of this pure blood mania his entire existence. So it makes sense that he would be like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and...
But so has Dobby. He's been in that mania in the Malfoy household for, you know, maybe not quite as long.
That is true. But I do feel like that... I feel like that's the difference. I like that you bring that up. I feel like the Malfoys have always felt like posers in many ways. Like, they pretend to be like super dark wizards, but in the end, like, they have put up a front. And yeah, they didn't treat Dobby well, but at the same time, I don't feel like it was this thick of like nasty dark wizarding-ness.
Either way you paint it, I don't think that it excuses Creature's behavior. It may explain
And I'm not excusing it.
It.
I'm yeah, not
it
excusing
may
it at all.
It explain and give yeah. you context
yep.
and give you an understanding, like, kind of, you know, a little bit of what Hermione's saying in this chapter, like, hey, he's been alone for so long and he's only known one thing, that he doesn't know what he's saying. He doesn't realize he's saying it out loud. Like, You can't fault him for that. Yep. He does not understand what he's doing. But at the same time, you know, you have to be like, it doesn't make it okay that he's walking around calling people mudblood and stealing and all this stuff.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So, I you know, you feel a little bad for him, but at the same time, you're like, I can't really, like, excuse this sort of terrible person you've become, right. This creepy, creepy character.
Well, and I think that's going to be the question, right? That we're seeing here, Sirius still doesn't treat Creature very well, and nobody treats Creature very well in the house. So the question I think she is leaving us now to ask then, is there a possibility that if you treat Creature nicely, and you begin to treat him more like a being that deserves some kind of respect, will that make any change at all in him? And I think that will be an interesting question to see how she answers that throughout this book and throughout the rest of the series. And so I think she begins those questions here, but we're not fully, I think, going to get the answers to this series. We're not going to get it. We're not going to get the complete answers in this book, actually. We're going to have to wait till the end, honestly.
Yeah. And also, I think she's asking you on a human basic level, like, does his poor behavior excuse your poor behavior? And I think that's kind of that very basic teaching your little kid fundamental that just because someone's mean to you doesn't mean you get to be mean to them back.
You know, two wrongs don't make a right, they say.
Exactly. So that's kind of the question I feel like she's always playing with here, especially between Sirius and Creature. I mean, the rest of them aren't particularly unkind to him. They just don't go out of their way to be kind to him. So I think, you know, really the Sirius Creature dynamic there, she's trying to show you that like Sirius's behavior is also not excusable, even if Creature is a foul being.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it does really just create this interesting question about this character, and I like that she's bringing that up, and I really do think that we are seeing something that's really important here, which is that the way you treat somebody else should not be predicated on how they treat you.
Right.
And what we're seeing here is just this reciprocal nature, this kind of contractual almost that if you treat me this way, I'll treat you that way. Whereas it should be that, no, we should treat everybody the same regardless of how they treat us. You know, obviously we're not talking about like, you know, wars and stuff like that and all that stuff. But we're just in this context, how we treat the other side makes a big difference. If we just treat each other the same, you're no better than, you know, so.
And I think she's really trying to, on that note, trying to point out the fact that, like, he's never going to obtain a different result. Like, Creature's never going to stop doing what he's doing if you keep doing what you're doing. Like, continuing to treat him poorly is not going to make him all of a sudden be a better house elf. Like,
right.
Someone has to break this cycle before, you know, there's even the potential for something else to happen, which, like you said, is we're not going to see if that would pay off or how that will pay off in for several books. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting element that she puts in there. It's only a couple of sentences, but it really does weigh pretty heavily on what's going on here. And it gives you some insight into kind of Sirius and his character and what he's thinking and experiencing. And like we talked a little bit about in the last episode, how, you know, he's really experiencing this depression that we don't quite understand. We know he's being left out, but it's very childlike, this sort of angst that he's feeling, which is why Harry can relate to it so well, is because he's basically being a 15-year-old boy. So,
well, I think that something else I thought about as well, think about all the time that Sirius spent in Azkaban.
Yeah.
And now he's locked up again. And yes, it's under house arrest, right? But this house doesn't sound all that much better than Azkaban. I mean, you know, there might be less dementors, but it's no cleaner, really. And it's a place that reminds him of the worst things in his life.
Well, and I really like at the end of the chapter, not to skip ahead, but you know, Harry has asked Sirius that if things in his trial, in his underage magic trial, go poorly, if he could come back and live with Sirius. You know, he doesn't want to go back to Privet Drive, and the fact that, you know, Sirius's response is like, that place must be just awful if you would rather be here than there, you know, and it really speaks to how little Sirius thinks of this childhood home, and does kind of make you feel a little bit like he is imprisoned again. And it speaks to the same feelings that Harry has about, you know, Privet Drive. It's very similar, right? He doesn't want to be there either, and it's his childhood home. Maybe it's not gross and disgusting, filled with doxies and boggarts and cabinets, but you know, it is still a place that's wholly unpleasant for him to be in. He just doesn't want to go back to those memories. And you have to, you know, we have to appreciate as readers that that's what Sirius is experiencing too, which is not helping anything.
The most fascinating thing about all this is last chapter we learned about a Bogart being in a desk, and here we hear about that desk again, and they're going to get Mad-Eye Moody to look at it. We learned about all of these different little creatures that are, you know, can infest magical houses. It just sounds awful.
Oh, it does sound like totally awful. Like, yeah, I don't know if I'm willing to become magic in order to deal with these tarantulas and doxies and oh my God, it all sounds horrible.
It really does. And then on top of that, you know, people keep coming in and out of the house and they might hear things every once in a while. You hear Kingsley Shackbolt talking about, you know, that he just got relieved by Hestia and she's got Moody's cloak, but that's all they really hear. But why is Molly using, I got a question for you. Why is Molly using Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests? How helpful could that really be?
You caught that too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And I was waiting for Harry or Hermione or someone to be like, yeah, about that. I feel like it worked out okay though, because I have to imagine that he stole the memories or had people, if I remember correctly, he jinxed people into sharing their memories or sharing their gifts, and then he would take credit for it. So it would be like me having J.K. Rowling write my biography and then saying that I'm the one who wrote it. So the material within the book is probably accurate or as accurate as it could get, but the man himself trying to talk about the material in the book would probably not be super reliable.
No, but you're right. It is funny though. It's just it was kind of like a nice little nod to before, and I just enjoyed that. You know, like
I sort of expected someone to roll their eyes though for them to be like
Hermione. Yes, oh. I totally expected that. I also really like that in this chapter that we, you know, Harry gets a chance to talk to George and Fred about their business, and you know he sponsored them, and he doesn't want anything from them, but he's just really interested to see where they are, and they're talking about what they're making, and they have all of these skeeving snack boxes, which are these ways to get you out of class because they make you sick, and they've been testing them on themselves, and some of them haven't gone so well because one of them had a nosebleed that they almost couldn't stop.
And the other one made you throw up so badly that you couldn't take the antidote to keep you from throwing up. Like, that just sounds so miserable.
Sounds so awful. Sounds so awful. But I love that, you know, the fact that they're talking about the idea about the jokes still being on and how they put in an advertisement in the Daily Prophet, which is great because, you know, mom doesn't read it anymore because all it does is tell lies about Dumbledore and you. So this is awesome.
Yeah, I love that we get that little snippet too, that they've all stopped reading the Daily Prophet because, you know, of all the lies it tells them, they don't really trust anything it holds anymore, which I find interesting because you would think that someone should still read it, even though it maybe doesn't hold truth, but for the same reason that they have Madungus around, right? Like the more information they have, the better. But yeah, I did find that really funny that they did that. And I do like hearing about the creation and their thought process and how utterly creative the twins are. And they're just brilliant in their own accord. And I really do love that.
Well, and it's kind of neat too, is they're actually taking some of the things that they're using with they're finding in the cleanup, because they think it's going to help them. So that's kind of fun as well. A couple interesting things we learned. One is Madungus bringing all of these cauldrons. In fact, the same ones that he was after when he left his duty watching Harry and Molly yelling at him, which is hysterical. And then Creature also doing some interesting things in the fact that he has been stealing some of the things that they have been cleaning up and trying to hide them, like a ring and a locket and things like that. Things are disappearing.
I also do like that. I do also like that we get another visitor who stops by, you know, briefly in McGonagall stops by in her street clothes.
Yes,
and, and Harry says something about how strange it is to see her not in her, you know, official Hogwarts attire, and how she just, he just was like, it was just weird. I couldn't watch it. You know, it was, I thought that was so, so fun to have that little homage to, and to really get an idea of what this ragtag band of the Order of the Phoenix really is comprised of, because we're slowly learning what their membership base is consists of and who's all a part of it. So,
right. Well, and we also learned too, one of the things, you know, Harry just asks as well about Creature, like, if he's bothering you this much, why don't you just get rid of him? And Sirius is like, I can't at this point because he knows too much about the Order.
Right.
And so what was interesting is when we get to this mural. Well, and I thought this was so fascinating because this is it happened to me a little bit in some ways, because I had a friend come and live with us for quite a while, and he's actually my brother-in-law now. And he didn't have the same experience of you know, leaving his house for this kind of reason, but he did come and live with us. And so the fact that Sirius leaves his family and goes to live with his best friend, and how he was always welcome at the Potter's place, and how it became a family for him. And then he had an uncle who left him some gold, and he didn't have to worry about things anymore. And, you know, I just think this is, you get a sense of the life that he has had, and that it hasn't been awesome when it comes to family, but he's had to make his own family, much the way that we've seen Harry have to do.
Yeah, it's like hearing Harry's story from another perspective, and, you know, in a different way, and, you know, not because Harry had to leave because his parents were crazy pure blood fanatics, but you know, it's still such an experience, and it's heartbreaking to have to think about someone having to do that. But it takes a very brave person in order to step out and say, this is what I have to do because this is what I believe to be right. And to turn their back on family and to do that can be, you know, huge. And especially because as we're recording this, we're coming up on, you know, Christmas here. That's usually a testy time for those people, in terms of, you know, having to get rid of toxic relationships and make those decisions and deal with, you know, super happy family time when that's not what you experience. And I feel a little bit like, you know, Sirius has had to live with that his whole life. He's sort of always gotten shafted by everything, you know, winds up in Azkaban, falsely accused, and all of that fun stuff. You know, he's definitely had a tough go of it. And you kind of want to see him just get a break. You just want to see him get a break. And you really feel for him.
I find it fascinating too. We learned that he had a brother who was younger than he was, that became a Death Eater and actually was killed by Voldemort. Well, not Voldemort specifically, but one of his followers. On his orders, most likely. And so that's pretty awful. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the people that we learn that he is related to, as we were talking about earlier, the fact that, you know, he's related to Tonks, that Andromeda, her mother, was his favorite cousin, the fact that her sisters are actually Bellatrix and Narcissa, which is fascinating. And the fact, too, that Molly Weasley and he are cousins. And this is something that's really interesting because it goes all the way back now to what we're seeing in the Fantastic Beasts series. And one of the things that I've seen in that series is that people think of the Wizarding World as being too small and a little bit too, you know, basically inbred, like everybody knows everybody and everybody's related to everybody. But I think it's interesting that she had set up all the way here that this is, the wizarding community is very, very close, and a lot of people are related to each other in the wizarding community. And part of that has been the unfortunate side of the pure blood mania that some of wizarding kind has had, which we know goes all the way back to Grindelwald now. And the fact that this is a community that pretty much stays closer because they are usually hidden. And so I think that that is fascinating to see that the wizarding community actually is just a very close-knit community. And so it really is one that everybody kind of knows everybody, and everybody's kind of in some way related to somebody, or, you know. I thought that was fascinating that she had already worked that part out here. Like, this is purely something that we see written into the Harry Potter story from, you know, the beginning.
Yeah, and we also find out amongst, as we're learning about all these purebloods, that we actually have sort of already met one of these purebloods through the Pensieve memories, and that Harry kind of already knows two of Sirius's cousins, a Bellatrix Lestrange and her husband, as the people who were indicted along with Barty Crouch Jr.
Yep.
And he kind of shudders just getting an idea of how devoted this family is to their bloodline, of how she was so proud of her following and how she'd be rewarded in the long run, you know, like this super devout allegiance that she held to this cause and this belief. You know, it even, I think in the book, it even says something to the effect of it, you know, it made Harry shudder to think about it, because of just, it sort of really paints that picture of, you know, families willing to denounce members, and her willing to denounce anything but her ways is really showing you how singularly focused their objectives really are. So yeah, it's a really interesting little snippet, and in an interesting way of both, like you said, making us understand how tight knit this community is, but also broadening an understanding of what all is going on here and what all is at stake.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating too. We also learn more about the house and the in the sense that Sirius lets us know why it's the ideal place for the headquarters, because, you know, his father had made it unplottable by Muggles, and then Dumbledore had added his own protection to it as well, that he's the secret keeper, so only he can let people know where it is, and that's why Harry knows, is because the note was actually written by him that he was given. So you get the sense that this is a very secure place for everybody, and that's the reason that they're here, and that's really cool. Like, it's neat to kind of learn the different ways that magic works here. I also thought that this chapter was a lot of fun in the sense of just learning the different creatures that are in the magical world. But on top of that, the different types of magic to get rid of them. And we get a real sense like that magic is, to wizards like Sirius, you know, this is blasé. You know, like he gets, he touches this box of snuff, right? And it's poisonous. And his hand starts to like get all, I mean, just completely messed up. And he just immediately kind of taps it with his wand and it's gone. You know, so like you get this sense of how magic is for wizards like this. It's kind of so easy because it's just a part of their everyday life and everything that they do. So I really enjoyed that. And I thought that was just something that was really interesting about this chapter. And it also, you know, these days, they kind of gave Harry a way to forget about what was coming up. But unfortunately, by the end of the chapter here, we can't forget about it because it's the next day. And he's traveling to the ministry. And that fear is really beginning to loom large now as what's going to happen. And the last thing we get in this chapter is that as they're talking about what's going to happen the next day, Molly mentions something about Dumbledore, and so does Sirius, and he says, "Wait, Dumbledore?" And he said, "He came last night while you were in bed," and how Dumbledore coming to the house on the eve of his hearing made him feel even worse, because I think it made him feel even more worried about maybe what's to come. And wow, this chapter, man, for ooh, the 100th episode, I feel like I just leaves you very apprehensive for what's coming.
It doesn't end on quite the positive note that some of our other chapters end on. But they, you know, they just, it just leaves you with all these questions because we've never had Dumbledore quite give the cold shoulder the way we get this impression he is right now. But at this point, we still just don't know, right? Maybe he's just busy. Maybe it's just inconvenient. And he's doing the like, oh, I wish I'd had time to say hello to Harry. But he certainly doesn't seem to be making an effort. And I think it's the lack of understanding of what's going on versus the actual acts that are being performed that are kind of causing us as readers to wonder. I also feel like the more resentment you harbor, every emotion means more and more. So if this had been the first time Harry thought Dumbledore was maybe ignoring him, it wouldn't have been such a big deal, but he sort of feels like it's every time now. So it'll be interesting to see, and we're going to head to the ministry in the next chapter and really figure out, everyone seems very confident that Harry's not going to have any problems at his trial. So we will see if their confidence is misguided or well-founded here very shortly. But we definitely end on sort of a dreary note. And Sirius's attitude sort of matches that dreariness that we're seeing as well.
Yeah, it is... It's a strange place to leave us, and especially the whole thing with Dumbledore is fascinating to me because, you know, you did definitely take it that way that he's avoiding Harry. But at the same time, you know, when we heard in the last chapter what's been happening, even the people who are a part of the Order of the Phoenix, they're not able to stay around a lot. I mean, even Lupin, who has been living there, hasn't really been around that much. So I find it interesting because what you said is definitely from Harry's perspective. But again, it's all about this perspective thing. And, you know, Harry at this moment has made a lot of things about himself that aren't necessarily about him yet, or that may not be about him at all.
Right.
And that's the thing we'll have to figure out is what is actually about Harry and what's not about Harry. And the book will definitely answer those questions for us by the end. So, but we'll have to wait to get there till next week when we do dive into the Ministry of Magic, where, you know, the last book, we really opened up the wizarding world a lot. And in this book, we're actually going to open up we're going to continue that. We're really going to open up the wizarding world and kind of see more of the inner workings and places we've never seen before, which is cool. So, very fun to get to those kind of things. But Drea, if anybody wants to talk to you about some of their favorite moments from 100 episodes of the show, or maybe just anything in the Harry Potter universe that they love or they like, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and that's Kaufman.
You could find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram and on Letterboxd and, of course, Tumblr under the same name. I am also here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, which is a Star Wars podcast where we, strangely enough, talk about Star Wars every week. It is honestly a blast, so I hope you will check that out. I'm doing two shows over on the Trek FM network. One is called The Orb, with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then the other is the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, where we talk about all the fandoms we love. We've had so much fun this year talking about, I mean, just an incredible amount of fandoms. So I hope you'll check out the show and enjoy it. You can also find me on a show called Cinema Stories, and I do that with my friend Courtney, and that's where we talk about films, but through the lens of faith. Well, thank you so much for 100 episodes of Checking Your Owlpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.